Hello, hello. Welcome back to A Rip in the Veil, your safe place to discuss everything that makes you feel unsafe. Now, today's disclaimer for this episode is, once again, it is super ridiculously windy. If you live on the East Coast, you probably experience something similar, but please bear with me because, like, shit just keeps falling on my house. And I kept waiting for the wind to die down, but it's just not. So, excuse all the shit falling on my house. If you hear it fall and then I just cut off, that's when you should be concerned. But if it's something you can deal with, I please ask you to please, because I've literally, it's been like this all day. So, don't have any other updates or news, just of course, as usual, if you have any suggestions for topics, comments, questions, concerns, please shoot me an email at aritvpodcast@gmail.com. Oh, there was my other disclaimer. I've also been drinking a little bit, so you know, the world is quarantined right now. What else are we supposed to do? I fought off a beer nap and decided to record this episode and just said, fuck it. Today we're circling back to A Rip in the Veil's second episode on veils and vortexes, and we're going to talk about one of the most notorious vortexes in North America, and it's known for its dark history and has earned the cute nickname of the portal to hell. This could be none other than the country music club Bobby Mackey's Music World in Wilder, Kentucky, along the Licking River. Side note, this is just personally interesting for me. I did not realize this until I looked at this location on a map, but it is very close to the Ohio border and like an hour away from Dayton, Ohio. And I have a lot of family in Dayton and like the general southwestern Ohio region. So I will most definitely fit this into my next trip. Like the Bridgewater Triangle, which is another vortex that we explored in episode 4, a bunch of bad shit has happened here, okay? And I'll try to keep it as like chronological and organized as possible, but this is another episode I would have loved to make a timeline for, so trust me, a website is in the works so I can post visual shit, notes, and, you know, transcripts and my sources for everything. But for now, I am going to put my sources, and I'll probably start putting my notes on Facebook as well. It might be a little obnoxious to like have as a post, but it's better than nothing. So of course, if you wanted to do your own research, like a friend of mine suggested, hello. If you want to do your own research and just kind of follow along, just so you know, my notes are not going to be grammatically correct. This isn't a proper transcript. This is me just like literally what I use for the episodes. So, you know, don't get too critical there, but otherwise that's where I'm going to put it for now. So if you're not following me on Facebook, it's the same, A Rip in the Veil podcast on Facebook, and you can also find that through the link in my Instagram bio. So if anyone wants to do that, there you go. So this is a pretty famous spot that is investigated and toured regularly. BuzzFeed Unsolved did an investigation here, and so did good old Zach Baggins. I'm going to say Baggins, sorry if that's wrong, but him and his Ghost Adventure Squad. We'll go over their findings as we go, but just in case you want to check those out on your own as well, those links will be included at the bottom of my episode notes. So I really do enjoy BuzzFeed Unsolved. Shane and Ryan, oh god, this room is so dusty. I got dust up my nose. Shane and Ryan are very entertaining and provide different perspectives. One is a believer, one is a skeptic. And Ryan also cracks me up with the way he gives the history of these places. I don't know if you guys watch Parks and Rec, but it's like when Ben from Parks and Rec says,
Bobby Newport.
So that's what it reminds me of. There are tons of investigations that you can find online, videos like paranormal investigations, but I'll just be referencing those two just for time's sake. So as per usual, we're starting with the history, and damn if there is not a lot. As with most of these super haunted places with a lot of encounters, So, as with most of these super haunted places, there are definitely some true crime components, you know, not so delicately sprinkled throughout its past. This is long, but honestly, it's far from boring, at least in my opinion. So what was this place before it was flooded with cowboy boots and presumably cut-off jeans? Well, it wouldn't be a part of United States history if it didn't start with taking land from the Native Americans via bloodshed. The land had already seen various violent battles between Native tribes because of the prime location. It was right by a river. The land was supposedly very fertile, but by the 1700s, white settlers had stolen the land and called it Like. That's wrong. Light Station? L-E-I-T-C-H Station, because of the nearby railroad that was built. The area was renamed to Wilder, which is what's currently known as, in the 1800s. A big-ass slaughterhouse was built in 1850, and it was no longer in operation by 1890. And one of the most charming features, a well in the basement used to drain the blood and innards from the animals into the Licking River, was also said to be used by satanic cults. And they would end up making use of the well for similar purposes. Every good cult needs a place to throw the remains of their animal and possibly human sacrifices, right? So then in 1896, a headless young woman was found in a nearby field, like less than 2 miles away from the former slaughterhouse. If you brought a beverage with you today, prepare to spit it out dramatically. Cue poor Pearl Bryan. She was a 22-year-old from Greencastle, Indiana, and poor Pearl, she was pregnant, and her boyfriend went to dental school in Ohio and convinced Pearl to come back to Cincinnati for an abortion. Now, this fuck's name was Scott Jackson, and he and his roommate Alonzo Walling decided it was a good idea, you know, being dental students and all, to try to abort the baby themselves. As you can predict, this did not go very well for our poor Pearl. At some point, things drastically took a turn for the worse, and in an attempt to cover their asses, they surgically removed her head and left her in a field. Some resources say that she was still alive when this happened. Some say she was heavily drugged, so does it really make a difference? She was practically dead. Some say she was already dead, and they performed this in the field that they left her in, which is a field by Fort Thomas, Kentucky. So apparently they would have also gotten away with it if they hadn't left her shoes on. Apparently they were custom made, and I mean, it was 1896, so there weren't many other identifying factors to go off of. So what the fuck does this have to do with anything? Well, here's the even more fucked up part. Pearl's head was never found. According to Bobby Mackey's friend and author, Douglas Hensley, when bloodhounds were brought out to search for the head, they led police directly to the building a search was conducted, and they never found it. So it is thought that the boyfriend, Scott Jackson, could have been caught up in satanic activity and that it was their intention to murder her from the start. Some say it was a complete accident. Some say that they never gave up the location of the head to cover their tracks, but who's to say? What is commonly thought is that no matter the reason, her head was thrown down that basement well, the same one that was used by the slaughterhouse. Again, for what reason, we don't know. Both murderers were hung, and Alonzo promised to haunt the area for the rest of his ghost life. Beer break. So, most of the original slaughterhouse was demolished in the beginning of the 20th century, except for our beloved well. In the 1920s, the lot was given a new life when a new structure was built. Now, this was in the Prohibition era, so it was turned into a speakeasy, club, casino, secret, kind of hush-hush deal. Now, E.A. Buck Brady bought the joint in 1933 when Prohibition ended and named it The Primrose. And it did pretty well for some years, but that success attracted mobsters from nearby Cincinnati, and they wanted a piece of it, okay? They tried to force their way in, but Buck wasn't budging. It was pretty much just like, fuck off, I'm not selling. So as you can imagine, the mob didn't really like this and continued the violence with threatening customers and instigating fights. Now, Buck was fed up and pulled a gun on Red, aka mobster Albert Masterson, and then Buck was forced to leave the casino biz in 1946 when he was was charged with attempted murder, which, okay, to me, that feels like a setup. Like, they were waiting for him to get fed up so they could press charges when he, you know, decided to do something about it, you know? Anyway, in the 1950s, the club got a new owner and name. It is now being called the Latin Quarter. The new owner had a daughter that worked and danced there. The connection about them being related, like father-daughter, is speculated in some resources, but, you know, just to throw it out there. And her name was Joanna. Joanna fell in love with a singer at the club named Robert Randall. Well, poor Joanna got knocked up and they planned to run away. Dad did not like that very much and had Randall killed. Apparently, he had some connections where he didn't have to get his own hands dirty, you know what I'm saying? So Joanna found out and poisoned her father and then herself in the basement of the club next to our favorite well. So according to BuzzFeed Unsolved, there is no record of a dancer named Joanna, but there is a death certificate of a Joanna that died by poisoning at Bobby Mackey's, well, at the Latin Quarter. I tried to look up the death certificate, but it takes like 30 days and it costs money. It's not expensive, but I don't have 30 days, so maybe one day. But just as a side note, this is something that's brought up over and over. Bobby Mackey, the current owner, his full name is Robert Randall Mackey. So, and that's the name that you would use to look it up if you wanted to look up the public records. Again, that link will be on my Facebook page, but some of his property is just under Robert Mackey. So just something to note. But some definitely think this is just too much of a coincidence, but Bobby, of course, rejects that. If fellow reincarnation believers are wondering, Bobby Mackey was born in 1948, so he was already alive when the singer Robert Randall was killed, which some people claim that the reincarnation has to essentially happen in a very close time period for there to be like a soul transfer, essentially. I don't know. I do believe in reincarnation, but there definitely seems to be kind of some variation, so it is really hard to say. But continuing with the tragic trajectory of this place, it was shut down in 1978 after there were a few fatal shootings on the property. Now, here's where it gets weird again. Now, most people say that 78, that same year, is when Bobby Mackey brought the property. Now, I actually did look up the records, and they list the country music singer having bought the place in 86, as far as the public records go, for what looks like he bought it around like 20 G's, and this does not include the parking lot. So obviously that's a discrepancy, but I'm just telling you what I found. Okay, okay. And unless I'm doing it wrong, the year this place was built was also not listed, and there are no other owners listed either. I tried to look up the other names of the businesses, and again, it didn't give me much. That's harder to look up than like you look it up by address, like by location or by owner. So it kind of got a little bit harder to, when you don't know if someone used their real name, you know, what I'm saying. Like, there ended up being some gaps there that I was not able to fill in. But like I said, these are public records available on CampbellCountyKentucky.com. Again, it will be on my Facebook page. Now, I found this interesting, especially because if you look up at Bobby Mackey's Music World on Wikipedia, they point this out as an obvious lack of evidence, and a lot of people discredit people's experiences at Bobby Mackey's because the lack of paper trail, right? Well, yes, we don't have it all in writing. To me, in a way, that doesn't necessarily discredit things. And almost in a situation like this, especially, you know, there was a lot of crime and a lot of, you know, there were mobsters, things like that. But I mean, people do messed up stuff. Apparently, law enforcement at that time also said documentation was lacking because of the high volume of crime. So how are we to, you know, how are we to say people can make other people completely fall off the face of the earth? So what makes us think that someone couldn't make pieces of paper disappear, records disappear? I mean, it really wouldn't take much in that day and age. All you have is the paper trail. There's no electronic, you know, it's a little bit harder to say. Maybe they just weren't public record. So take this information for what it is and trust no one, not even me. No hard feelings. It's okay. Now for all the hauntings and activity. And just like the history, it's a fucking lot, okay? You ready? Let's fucking do this. Bobby Mackey is a skeptic himself, even after all of these years, but those around him, including his own wife, have had quite a few encounters. He also wrote a song titled Joanna about the girl that committed suicide in the basement, and he has a friend, Doug Hensley, remember? We talked about him earlier. He was the one that said the thing about the bloodhounds in Pearl's Head. So he wrote He wrote a book linking the history and the hauntings called Hell's Gate. So Janet, Bobby's wife, who started out as a skeptic as well, was once in an old apartment on the property and pushed up the stairs and told to get out by some force that she later identified as Alonzo Walling after seeing a sketch of him from the newspaper. And she will no longer go into the club, and she refused to talk to the Ghost Adventures crew while they were there interviewing people. Now, this is a side note. Some of the other resources I saw, this story was kind of jumbled. I got a couple different, like some said that she smelled roses, which will come up again in a minute. Some people said she was in the basement. But I'm going with Bobby Mackey's interview on Ghost Adventures. He's claiming she was in an apartment and she was pushed up the stairs and told to get out. I don't know the exact layout of the place. It's hard to tell when you're watching videos because, I mean, you're getting all these different angles. Everybody's moving. It's hard to really tell where these things happen. But just to keep in mind, some of these encounters differ site to site, even if it's just slightly. But if I was able to find an interview with the person, that's what I went with. So, an employee has also seen a spirit that identified herself as Joanna and left behind her signature scent of roses, which is what I just was talking about. That's like her signature thing to some people smell her rose perfume. So, that same employee also saw a dark negative presence of a man behind the bar. Now, according to Mackey, the former caretaker, Carl, who lived in an apartment upstairs. Now, I was thinking about this. I could not verify if that was the same apartment that Janet had her experience. So, don't know. But according to Mackey, Carl would sleep with a shotgun. And at every morning at 6 a.m., it sounded like there was an army marching around the place. Now, Carl was also possessed by demons that occupy the club. And he even had an exorcism, like, in the kitchen, after which he came to and his hands were around the pastor's neck. And also that author and friend Doug Hensley witnessed that exorcism as well. So when BuzzFeed Unsolved investigated Carl's old apartment, they did capture a door. It was like two doors that swang outwards. They did catch them moving a little bit on their own. I don't know. They never really debunked it, so I don't know. It could have been a draft. There was like a stool propping them up. There was actually a sign on the stool that said, "Danger, keep out." And they moved the stool with the sign on it out of the way to get into this closet type door thing. It was like a small little closet deal. So I don't know. They never really debunked it, so it's hard to say. They didn't really seem too freaked out about it. Now, a headless Pearl Bryan has also been seen around the building, and witnesses only identify her by the era of her clothing and, well, you know, her being headless and all. Oh, and remember Buck Brady, one of the owners? So he's also been seen and identified by people matching their descriptions with photos. As you can imagine, this place has been investigated like 50 million times, and there's one paranormal investigator, she's the manager of that specific team, that seems to frequently conduct these tours, and they, the BuzzFeed Unsolved guys, interviewed her, and she said that it was a pretty quiet night, and she was locking up, and all of a sudden, all the windows, doors, and the floors just started shaking, and no one was there, but the whole fucking place was shaking. Like, you know what I meant to look into, and I didn't? Sorry, bad me. I was wondering, is there an earthquake? Like, that would be the only plausible explanation for something that would shake an entire building like that. But, I mean, I don't even know if that area of the continent is prone to earthquakes. Didn't look it up. Whatever. Sorry. So, there are also some general, just, like, hot spots where the activity is more frequent. I mean, honestly, dude, this whole place is a hot spot. So, I guess it's, like, the extra hot, like, the extra spicy spots. This is the, so these are like the fire sauce spots of Bobby Mackey's. So there's a There's a catwalk over the stage, and there's a spotlight room, which apparently psychics have been in and they've gotten very ill. People have gotten thrown. There's an old china room. And there's a platform near the kitchen where the wall caught fire after the caretaker's exorcism. The fire department came. Nobody could explain it. And then there's a mirror in the main room that people have reportedly seen spirits in. And of course, you know, the hell well, if you will. One of the truly unexplainable events happened to the club manager. After closing, you know, all the lights are off and everything is shut down, the lights would come back on and the jukebox would play the anniversary waltz, a song that the box didn't even have. And if that's not enough, the jukebox wasn't even plugged in. She was also interviewed in the Ghost Adventures episode and recalls her encounter there if you wanted to see her talk about it. Now, there were various contractors that were there to renovate, and they were slapped, sometimes hissed and growled at. And maybe that's why it looks pretty run down. The place does not look like it's been kept up. And, like, not to talk shit or anything, but, like, look this place up and tell me that it does not look abandoned. It would honestly kind of make sense though, because spirits just aren't down with change like that. And honestly, coming from someone who would always get a spike of activity every time they would rearrange their room growing up, it seems like a pretty reasonable excuse to not renovate, you know, especially when you're dealing with demons and all that shit. So apparently there's also a woman in white that is said to appear in the parking lot and then disappear. Could not find any possible theory as to who that was, but there's also obviously just some general spooky shit, you know, the usual screams, furniture moving around, banging on the walls, and investigators having chronic issues with audio and video recording. There is also a report of a cowboy in the basement. Some have said that the cowboy is Scott Jackson, Pearl Bryan's boyfriend, but I could not confirm that. So a customer who was also featured on that Ghost Adventures episode was in the men's room washing his hands and saw a handlebar mustachio man after experiencing extreme heat, and a trash can was thrown across the room in front of him. The man said, "Die game, die game," which is said to mean "die well" in Latin, but I couldn't verify that myself, and by I couldn't verify that myself, I mean I tried to look it up and do Google Translate. To no avail. So the Baggins boys, that's a cute nickname, right? The Baggins boys caught a female voice, but to me, it honestly sounded like a cat. Not trying to discredit anything here, but it definitely sounded like a cat to me. But they did get some humming and some footsteps in that same bathroom that we just talked about. And this is just a note that I made while I was going over this. I said, ugh. This is just a side note because I'm watching the Ghost Adventures episode just to be sure I didn't miss anything. And they are so annoying when trying to get EVPs. Like, they talk all over each other and each other, and even in those early days, like, they just won't shut up. I did like all the interviews they did in the beginning, but I digress. I guess they were always like that, and I guess they will never change. So now, moving down to the basement, and of course, the well. An old maintenance guy did discover fragments of a human skull in the basement, and then they excavated a little bit and I guess found more pieces of skull, but it does not sound like they were able to find a whole skeleton. So, you know, just keep that in mind. And Mr. Zagbag himself did get scratched a couple of times during their investigation, you know, after doing his usual come fuck me up routine and fucking just poking the demon bears. And they did get what sounded like a female voice, followed by a male voice, and a male shadow that they believe is that cowboy that we talked about earlier. Now, is it a cowboy? Is it Scott Jackson? That's the one thing, you know, they haven't really been able to put together. People have also heard growling and felt something trying to push them into the well when they get close. Also just feeling of dizziness, just not feeling well in general. And some see screaming faces all over the walls, so that's pleasant. Some believe the spirits of Scott Jackson and Alonzo Wallings are still hanging out down there because, again, Alonzo did promise to haunt the place. So, especially down in the basement, that's like I said, it's the main entity and person tied together with the cowboy thing, but I don't want to pair them together just in case that's not what's going on here. But there's also a stairway that is near the well, and it goes nowhere. And one of the guys that helped the Baggins boys get into the basement thinks that it could be a stairway to heaven opposing the gateway to hell. Like, there's two exits out of this world in this one area very close to each other. And that same guy also claimed to see glowing satanic symbols on the floor and that the floor was hot to the touch. Now, Ryan and Shane were asking yes and no questions. Oh, they're the guys from BuzzFeed Unsolved. They were asking yes or no questions in the basement and did kind of sort of get a possible response. They could not get it to repeat the action though, so they didn't really think much of it. It could have just been a coincidence because apparently the flashlight that they were using is really sensitive. So again, we don't know if that, they didn't do a whole lot to debunk it, but they couldn't get it to repeat, but I think it was like Shane is the skeptic one and he was yelling like, if you want to hurt us or something, turn the light on. And they did, but then they couldn't get it to do anything else. So I'm sure Ryan, the believer, was very happy that they didn't get it to do anything else. So how are we feeling, guys? Warm and fuzzy, I assume. As you guys can probably tell, I find the idea of portals and vortexes very interesting because I do feel like one day we could possibly have a real scientific explanation to them. Oh, and something I forgot to mention earlier is that some cultures do believe that spirits can't cross flowing water. So some believe that this has kind of contributed to all the negative energies trapped there. And that, so remember I said the Licking River flows behind that? Some say that the reason, and the well itself runs into the Licking River, so some have said that it pretty much entraps them there and keeps this, like, concentration of really heavy energy there. So, you know, what do you think? Would you go on a tour here? Would you maybe even stay the night if you were given the opportunity? Honestly, I know I would definitely go on a tour, but depending on who I was with, I might stay the night, like do a lockdown type situation, like as an investigative type deal. But it definitely depend on who I was with. What do you guys think? Do you think this is all a bunch of bullshit? Does the lack of public record really matter for you? Does that kind of make this whole thing a big old sack of bullshit to you? Let me know. Shoot me an email. ARITVpodcast@gmail.com. Again, send me your opinions, send me your suggestions, whatever the hell you want to send me. Just, you know, no unsolicited dick pics, please. That's the only thing I ask. Otherwise, guys, I think that's enough heavy shit for today. I'm sorry if the wind was really annoying. I know I heard a couple things hit my house. So, you know, thanks for bearing with me. And until next time, friends.